There we go. Okay, we were talking about your early experience with ASTM. Did you attend these like regularly then, from the beginning?
While I was at, yes, quite. It's the first started when I was at Zirconi Vacuum. And then I still went to meetings when I first was at RCA. And went to most of the meetings. They were yearly meetings.
Mm-hmm. So, and I guess there was a fundamentals committee and...
There was a committee on fundamentals, and I think that was the one that I was involved in for several years before 1969, 68, whenever we turned into our own society.
What was the impetus behind that? Do you recall why that was done?
You ask a good question. I don't think I have a reasonable answer for it.
Okay.
But I think really that group went well beyond the descriptor being an ASTM sponsored committee, and of course it became more and more clear as time went on. So this then led to the thought that we should be a separate but equal society. With ASTM was in parallel. Yeah,
and is it you were, weren't you the first one of the first people involved as the president?
I was the second president.
You were the
yes.
second president
yeah.
of ASMS. Okay. And that was would have been whenever, well, in the late 60s, early 70s, probably.
I think I was first president. In fact, that is specified here. What did I do with it? Okay. ASMS Vice President Programs 68 to 70. And so we were apparently founded in 68. President 70 to 72. Past President 72 to 74.
So that was a pretty important period in this society as they just started to wave from.
It was a very important period because we didn't know whether it would fly. And I suspect we didn't have more than 60 or 80 people. And by now, several thousand?
Oh, yes. Yes.
What is the present count?
In terms of members, I'm thinking somewhere around between 2,000 and 3,000, maybe
yes.
2,400 or 2,500, mm-hmm. something like that. Yeah.
And the meetings have just
continue to get bigger.
Bigger and bigger and bigger.
I myself am curious how long that'll last, given the, you know, the fact that so many companies are doing what RCA did and is reducing, you know, their investment in science.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently the meeting size continues to get larger, so I guess people are finding other ways than working for large companies to do science.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were there any particular issues that you had to deal with other than this starting up kind of a thing that in your particular tenure at AS as president or in those 3 years or 6 years when you were involved, was there any topic that was of concern or that we don't know about from the, you know, that kind of got...
Well, I guess the topic really was, will it fly?
Yeah.
And
was there, I mean, did the group actively do things to promote it flying, or did they just kind of say, we're going to do this and see if it works, or...
Well, one of the issues that comes back to me now is that how do we divide up whatever financial support existed between ASMS and ASTM E14, and I guess it was divided evenly, even though the number of people going into ASMS were far in excess of the people who stayed in this one group.
Yes.
But what were the issues? Well, you had, of course, also personality problems, I'm sure. But it was an active group and worked well together mostly.
Yeah, well, obviously it did fly. We've got a very active group still, and I'm sure it's in no small part to the contributions that were made by those people who were having to deal with it when it split off from ASTM, and that was very successful, so I think we all owe you a debt of gratitude for making sure that it worked.
Well, one of the things we were trying to do was to get financial support from the companies, for example. So we had a group of maybe some 20 supporters initially, as I recall. Everything was on a small scale.
Did ASTM provide any funds?
Well, as we split, there were funds at ASTM, and those funds were split, as I remember, 1-to-1, even though ASTM E14 had by far the smaller group of people staying there. It was quite a small. And initially, we were working, they were coming to our meetings. It was part of it. So they were essentially a group, partially independent group within. But we're not part of ASTM anymore. ASMS anymore.
Well, as I guess you're aware, ASTM eventually was dissolved, I guess.
I don't know what happened.
Well, I was involved in a little bit of that. Graham Cooks, when he was president, floated an issue to decouple the ASTM E14 with ASMS and make them more independent, I guess, without whatever connections had been put in place. And
what year was that?
Whenever he was president, which would have been probably about 10 or 12 years ago, I'm guessing. But I guess what had happened was the ASTM continued to be a smaller and smaller group, and it had equal weight with ASMS and board decisions and so on, and he felt that was an inequity that should be rectified. So basically at that time there was a formal disconnection of the two societies, or of ASTM E14 and ASMS, and I don't even know if there is a E14 group in existence anymore. Because, I mean, the original charter was to establish standards. I mean, that was part of ASTM, was to establish standards, and the mass spec meeting had obviously become a very critical part of science, but it had very little to do, I mean, with establishing standards later on. Originally, it did have that type of a flavor, but it seemed to be that the annual conference was the primary function that the ASTM actually discharged.
And of course, those meetings, initially, I recall, 5 days, possibly one or two sessions at most, and the talks were fairly long. They might have been certainly 20 minutes at least. Then they got bigger and bigger, and the time got shorter and shorter. And the number of concurrent sessions grew like Topsy.
And as you were the vice president for programs, I guess at a time when maybe this wasn't too serious a problem, where you didn't have to balance too many concurrent sessions.
No, there were at most two concurrent sessions. Yes.
Well, posters have become a big part of our conference.
Absolutely. That's the only way to handle it.
Are there any, this is a kind of a big overview question, but is it kind of, we're becoming more and more aware of, I think, you particularly have lived through a period, technologically speaking, that is almost like going from the Dark Ages,
Stone Age.
Yeah, Stone Age. What do you see as being a major development in that period, that are one or two things that maybe were driving forces for the blossoming of technology and in that, in the period of your lifetime? Clearly there are a large number of developments. Have you reflected on any way on how maybe one particular or two particular technological developments have impacted things?
I would guess the solid-state devices are probably one of the outstanding ones. The death of the vacuum tube.
That probably is a good thing.
Yes.
It was a necessary technology until we got a better way of doing it.
Yes, into the mid-50s. As I mentioned earlier, I grew up with FP54s that were about this big, that existed already in 1938.
Was this like a triode or a?
A pentode.
A pentode?
Yeah, it was a pentode. And galvanometers. It was really the Stone Age.
So
it was fun.
Well,
it was. There was a lot of excitement there, challenge.
Did you ever feel discouraged because you didn't have the technical tools to perform a particular task? In the development of equipment, you're always pushing technology. It'd be nice if you had a better amplifier or a better vacuum or a better gate valve or...
Well, not discouraged, but we were pleased to see the natural developments that occur, whether it's in vacuum technology. After all, when I took the course in electronics at MIT, I was told a vacuum of 10 to the minus 8 is about the best one be able to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
10 to the minus 8 torr. Because the reason was that you couldn't measure any better than that.
What degrees did you take from MIT? Were they in engineering or in physics?
Physics. I guess initially I enrolled in engineering because I had my engineering degree and then took all physics courses, so I ended up in physics.
They had a PhD program in electrical engineering at that time?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was clearly not the area that I was interested in.
Were you able to keep abreast of developments in electronics in your instrument design and work? Were you kind of up to speed on the latest in tubes? And
well, I would say yes. The developments were slow in coming at the time. But there were things like just making magnetic field measurements, for example.
Or measuring temperature.
Well, measuring temperature.
Well, I meant to ask, did you like use Knudsen, source of Knudsen cells, or for these gas, the vapor pressure, the elements?
I'm afraid I don't even know about that.
Well, I guess it's like a small furnace with a black box type furnace.
No, I did not. The equipment that I built wasn't big enough to accommodate those cells. So I had to rely on some factors that had to work in when I read the narrow temperatures.
And so you just simply like heated the element in a small crucible, or
small crucibles. Well, there were problems like interaction. For example, silicon. What do you put silicon into? So it doesn't interact.
Did you have problems with species condensing out in places you didn't want them in the instrument?
Well, only when some well-meaning person turned off at one time the four pumps and let the mercury vapor pumps keep on pumping.
Not a very smart thing to do.
No. That happened at RCA, believe it or not.
And that, why would?
Well, it was, there was a shutdown, which I wasn't aware of. When I came in the next morning, it left on the, of course, in those days we used mercury vapor pumps.
Mm-hmm.
There was mercury vapor all over the place.
Mm.
Great.
It must have taken some time to clean up that.
I forget what I had to do, but it was from the bottom on up.
Mm. Yes, Well, I don't know if there's any other comments, items, did you feel that you'd like to cover?
Well, there might be some that I can think of as we go along. I came poorly prepared, I'm afraid.
No, I don't think so.
And in the sense that I should have refreshed my memory. And that begins to be a more important thing to do.
Well, why don't we take a break and...
So why don't we take a break and wash up for a moment and we can go over and... So here's a brief biography.
Okay.
Here's a publications list
that Excellent.
Goes up to 82. Then here was something that Jane Gale and Brian Benz did in 89, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There is an issue.
I think I've got a copy.
You have that?
Jane sent a copy of this.
Jane sent a copy? Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. So you have that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need this.
The Stone Age paper looks good.
The Stone Age paper I did in, 94 it was, which tells you quite a bit of background everywhere. Maybe a little better too than what I did today. And that then was a part of this, I just brought this along to show of this.
Mm.
Brian Benz put together this issue. And you have that at home?
Mm, yes.
You have a complete set of publications, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to note down the date of this.
So this was International Journal?
Volume 143. 1995, 1 to 288.
Okay.
That's where the Stone Age paper came in. I did some other things at various times.
Did you ever meet Al Near in your...
Yes, exercise? I did. I did several times. I met him at meetings. I once came over to their house in 1970 or 72. I met him at this...
Well, the San Antonio
San
Conference.
San Antonio Conference in 94, where I put together a retrospective lecture.
That was the 84 San Antonio meeting.
No, this was the special. Let's see, that's the same thing as this may be. Yeah, it's this one here. It's volume 66. 85, 1 to 92.
Did you ever get to interact with Near on any projects?
No, not directly, because he then went into the space projects that he had. And I did not. So there was Harry Zwick,
yes,
and sort of Near.
Oh, okay.
And this one.
Okay. Those were papers that came out of the ASMS meeting, I guess.
Yeah, they were...
Published.
Published.
Okay.
So I put together pretty much a history of Sims there.
Very good. Okay, I've got the reference for that.
You have the reference for that.
Do you have any of those early ASMS proceedings or ASTM E14 conference proceedings?
No, I don't have those anymore. I left those behind at RCA.
Okay.
Yeah, I had pretty much the complete set. There's one person who might still have them, and that is Rogers Woolston, who went to most of the early meetings.
Where is he now?
Well, he got... He left RCA Labs already fairly early. Didn't have much of a future there. He's a very interesting guy. He worked with me, in fact, in 57. Came, and very clever, very good instrumentalist, far better than I ever was, and so he contributed quite a lot, in fact, to my early instrument, like automatic controls for current controls, and he religiously went to all the meetings, so he should still have them, and since he still lives in Princeton, he would be likely to have that information. He then went into computers
mm-hmm.
early on.
Mm-hmm.
I would say he went into computers already in the 70s. But he has a strong feeling of history, so. And I have his address at home.
Oh, good.
If that helps.
Yes.
I'd have to dig it out, and I'd be glad to dig that one out. No, there's nothing else. I had made up two parallel copies. So that's probably what I have in hand here.
Well, this is good documentary material that will, you know, go with the...
I still have my copies of my publication. That's about all that I took along.
When you left RCA, was it... I mean, you wanted to quit then at that time, or were you kind of asked to leave, or...?
No, I wasn't asked to leave, and I had planned 82, and there was 75 years old. No, I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
65, wouldn't be 65?
I was 65 in... In 82 I was 70.
55.
Okay, I was 70 in 1987, so I had planned to leave in 87.
In 87?
87.
Yes. Okay.
The laboratory pretty much folded in March of 87. And by my retiring a few months early, I was able to get somebody else to stay. So I took a few months earlier and left March 31st of 87.
So you left the laboratory more or less when you wanted to, about 80?
Yes, yeah. But I still worked with Brian Benz until we left in 89.
Okay.
So I still came in and worked with him at the time.
But it was kind of pushed along a little bit because of the management.
I didn't have to, but I certainly felt if I could help somebody else to stay, mm-hmm. it would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so it was a matter of a few months. I would have retired in June, my birth month. So that is it at this moment.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. When you went to one of the mass spec meetings in Oxford, you indicated to me that you'd met Al Mir at that time. Was that the first time that you'd met Al, or personally, or one-to-one, face-to-face? Or?
Probably, yes, in 1961.
And was it Matauk or Herzog that was there?
Matauk. Yes. And they were obviously old acquaintances. And found each other, so to speak, and decided that they wanted to commit this meeting to his movie camera. So they asked me to take the picture, and pretty soon, so I was shooting the picture straight ahead, pretty soon one appeared on from the left and the other one appeared from the right. They came to the middle, greeted each other by doffing their hats, bowing deeply, and departing in the opposite direction. And that was all.
Was that camera Al Mir's camera? Or was
no, that was Matauk's camera.
So probably that film exists somewhere.
It might, but
getting hold of it would be difficult, but it's an interesting thing that someone might want to pursue. Then did you, were there any other acquaintances? You met Al at a couple other meeting occasions, as I recall.
I met him then a number of times. One of them was at a invited conference in 1964 in Texas, I guess. This is it.
Well, was that the San Antonio?
San Antonio
meeting. Okay, so you.
Yeah, it was 84.
84.
This was published in 85.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you have any technical interactions, or were you just primarily meet as friends? And
We met at dinner together. But there was no specific technical interaction. He talked about his flying mass spectrometers, as I remember. But he was always a very gracious, very warm, open person who was always willing to share his knowledge with other people.
Are there any other prominent mass spectroscopists that you can recall off the top that you might have met on the caliber of near, say, Matauk?
I met Matauk, I met Herzog, the Austrian Herzog. I met, who else? I was just thinking of somebody. Oh yes, there was a German by the name of Hindenberger,
mm-hmm.
who was very capable. The Dutchman,
of May?
Yep. Yeah, what?
There's Brunei at...
I met...
For Atlas Verkhoeve.
I met somebody at the Atlas Verkhoeve. But quite a number of people.
Okay.
I'd have to search my memory.
Okay, well, unless you have some other comments or
no.
recollections you want to share with us, and I think we've got a pretty good recording here for our purposes.
Well, if there are any afterthoughts, I can always get in touch with you.
Sure.